Welcome to the Natural Radio Show. This is your host, Sindira Mendes, and tonight's topic is going to be about diplomatic leadership. This is part two to last week's show, which was about the difference between dictatorial versus diplomatic leadership. Last week's show was about dictatorial leadership, the effective and ineffective ways of leadership, and we talked about its meaning, the characteristics, and different types of leaders who had that type of style. So once again, this week's show is going to be about diplomatic leadership. So without further ado, I'm just going to get right into this show. As you all are listening to in the background is to a beautiful, nice tone, which is a saxophone music that's being played in the background. So instead of just playing a show or a song, I will say, I just chose to play the saxophone music in the background. It's very relaxing and it's soothing. So I hope that you all enjoyed the background music. So what is diplomatic leadership? Okay, so it involves the ability to negotiate, be a representative of a policy, speaking publicly, and resolving conflicts. Usually, I think that diplomatic people are like mediators and they are peacemakers and they know how to resolve issues without any underlining bad feelings or anybody feeling, you know, a type of way or whatever the case might be. And I feel that in a way, diplomatic leaders do get results from their tactics and how they approach situations and resolve it. And I like the fact that when you're under diplomatic leadership, the leader who takes that approach is able to look at situations from both point of views and then be able to, as I said before, negotiate something and come to a resolution about an issue or whatever the situation may be. So usually they mediate, you know, both sides to resolve it effectively. So this is the part that I like about diplomatic leadership. And it doesn't really matter whether the people who they are leading like them or not. It's more or less about getting the work done and in a way that each person feel comfortable as far as doing. Whereas sometimes, either when you have like a diplomatic approach and given, you know, in your leadership, sometimes you might delegate responsibilities to other people, and based off you given those responsibilities or those roles at times, and I will mention later in the broadcast how sometimes it can and cause a conflict of interest. So what I mean by that is that usually sometimes when a project needs to get done and there's a goal that needs to be reached, sometimes, you know, the people are in key roles or positions of responsibility may take their time, or they may not know how to execute a project or goal effectively. So sometimes in taking a diplomatic approach, it's very important that, you know, diplomatic leaders put people that are skillful in position, so that way if anything was to happen, you know, issues and problems could be resolved accordingly. So I came across a quote. It says, with diplomatic leadership, it says, self-awareness is key to being responsive and effective leader. And that's another factor that I love about diplomatic leadership, is because these types of leaders are very aware of their emotions and they do not mesh and merge, you know, work with their emotions. They know how to deal with work and deal with their emotions accordingly without it merging. You know how, given a prime example, when people are working and they're not feeling the best, you know, and sometimes that mood can translate into their work if they're not feeling, you know, good, or maybe they may be at odds with the boss or whatever the case might be. So therefore, they may not give the best work quality because of whatever it is that they're going through. It can roll into their work or their responsibility. So as a result, usually what ends up happening is there is a delay in the work that needs to get done, and sometimes it can cause further conflicts to pile on to each other. So in order to basically like to avoid that and bridge the gap between leadership and those who, you know, are at work and may not like, you know, whatever it is that they're going through, sometimes when they have a leader, someone that's diplomatic that can come and understand their situation, you know, talk things through or allow them to talk things through and then bring things back into perspective as far as getting them back into alignment with their work. Sometimes diplomatic leaders can do that. They can be effective and being able to speak to a person that may be at odds, maybe with another coworker, as I said, or a boss. And they bridge the gap between their work and being able to draw that line with their emotions and to make sure that they are comfortable. Now, I wanted to highlight the fact of, you know, sometimes people could just bring their emotions on the job and it causes a delay with, you know, work and things of that sort. That's what I really wanted to highlight, you know, because of having, you know, dealing with workplace politics or not liking your boss or another coworker of that sort. So it can interfere with the work. But when you have, for example, someone that is a dictatorial leader, sometimes they are really strict and would not try to mediate a situation. They will just say, this needs to get done, and that's it. They're not trying to, you know, be understanding of people's emotions or whatever it is that they're going through, because they know that ultimately it's about the bigger picture of things. It's bigger than a person's emotions. So diplomatic leaders, even though sometimes they come off as if they are soft and, you know, ineffective in their approach, really, on the contrary, when they really understand themselves, they understand the dynamic of the people who they are leading, they can get great results. And like I said, it's not about whether people like them or not. It's just that their leadership becomes very effective over time, to where it can create a unison within a workplace where there's no animosity or things going back and forth. You know, so diplomatic leaders, they are the ones that deal with the issue head on, rather than having, you know, issues pile up one after another and just sweeping things under the rug, because they know that that's a recipe for disaster. So with that being said, I'm going to take a little break and I'll be right back. Enjoy the saxophone music. Once again, it's instrumental and it's more or less relaxing, and, you know, it's meant to give like a stress relief. Okay, so enjoy it. Okay, so I'm back. So now that I talked about what diplomatic leadership is about and gave a brief example of what diplomatic leadership is versus, you know, dictatorial leadership and how each leader will approach a situation referring to, let's say, a coworker who's bringing their emotions or whatever, you know, feelings that they are going through and creating a hostile environment because of something that they're going through personally. So I just briefly explain how each leader would approach the situation differently based off of the scenario. As I mentioned before, a dictatorial leader would recommend that that person get their work done. That is mandatory that they get their work done. If they don't show forth in their work, is like the highway. If you can't get this work done, bye-bye. That's a dictatorial leadership, whereas they don't play because they focus on a common goal of things and don't really care about people's personal issues at work. Just giving a prime example. But then when you have more of those diplomatic leaders who don't mind, you know, mediating or talking to their coworker who may be going through something and trying to alleviate a hostile environment by dealing with the coworker and trying to get to understand further what's going on with the person and trying to understand them and then get them to, you know, overcome whatever it is that they're feeling and then focus on getting their work done. So that's like the underlining issue between their personal and professional you know, life just in general. So it's a matter of being able to, you know, balance whatever it is that the person is going through and still be able to do their work effectively professionally as well. So dictatorial leaders are able to bridge the gap between the two and get the worker back in alignment with their work and alleviate, minimize a hostile environment in a workplace. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the traits of diplomatic leaders. So as I mentioned before, what diplomatic leadership is about, same thing, negotiators. They are so good at negotiating, whereas when they need to get results and they need a certain, you know, work or project to get done or something to be achieved, they don't mind negotiating. And what that negotiating look like is, okay, let's say they have a group or team meeting and they talking to each of their co-workers or say, I just like to use the manager employee kind of example, but let's say the manager is talking to all of their employees and this manager takes on a diplomatic approach. So let's say they explain to the employees that they are going to give out incentives if they are able to bring up the score for sales, whatever the case might be. This causes a motivating factor for the coworkers or employees to work to get that incentive that their manager had offered to them. And that's a prime example of what I mean as far as a diplomatic leader being able to negotiate in terms of being able to get what they want and being able to offer a benefit to the other person as well. Another factor about, traits about diplomatic leadership is the willingness to compromise. It's kind of like underlining same thing, similar to negotiating, but that's different. A willingness to compromise is, let's say, let's say a coworker has an issue with, let's say their schedule, And although, let's say, the manager might need this person to be at a certain time at, you know, as far as they shift, but let's say this coworker is not able to make it, you know, on that time, whatever the case might be. As a result, a diplomatic leader would understand the situation and try to adjust the schedule that is fitting to where all staff will still be able to work and it will be seamless as far as whatever accommodations that they may make for that particular employee per se, and how they shift and change the schedule, but like I said, in a seamless way that would not really affect the other co-workers in a way. So to me, in a way, that's like compromising in a way, because usually when a manager gives a set schedule and then a coworker comes to them and tell them that they are not able to make it at a specific time and therefore they need their schedule to be changed when it was already in effect, some managers would not do it. They would just say, you know, if you can't make this shift, then we have to get someone that can actually do it. But like I said, you have diplomatic leaders that will try to accommodate that person. And of course, there's going to be a limit to the capacity in which they compromise and accommodate that employee. Another factor that's considered a trait of a diplomatic leader is that they have an analytical temperament. Once again, as I said before, they're very self-aware about their emotions, how they interact, how they deal with other people. They're very conscious and aware of that. So as a result, you know, even though a diplomatic leader or person just in general that takes this style could be highly upset about a situation. And when I say upset, I mean really upset. They're not the type to lash out at, you know, employees or whatever the case might be. They have what we call stress release, where they know how to cope with whatever issues that they are experiencing, and they know how to draw the line, between professional and personal. And that's a good thing about diplomatic leaders, because when you are moved by your emotions and you are upset about a situation, and of course, let's say manager to employee, it's something that an employee did that just was senseless, just didn't make no sense, or was just, you know, very detrimental to the staff, the work environment, or whatever, what have you. Usually, when whatever is at stake, when a person gets excited and they also show it through their expressions and show, you know, that they are upset visibly, what ends up happening is that usually you give your power away to either to the situation or to a person that is actually provoking you. And that's not good. You as a leader, if you are looking to be a leader or a dictatorial leader, you have to understand that you have to have your emotions under control at all times. And you have to have a level of patience with yourself and with the situation and with other people. If you do not have that and you're short-tempered, then that means that you have a long way to go and you still have to work on the temperamental factor of yourself. So that does not mean that you're not a leader, you don't have leadership qualities. It just means that you need to work more on the professional part of your leadership, because you don't want to be put in a compromised position to where, you know, the employees then look at you like you're less than them or beneath them, or whatever the case might be, or they lose respect for you. You know, you don't want that, okay? So you want to always keep the momentum that you are in control. You know, you have things under control by showing that you are in control of your emotions. You know, you're in control of the situation and you're in control of your staff. Okay, so that's a good approach to have as a diplomatic leader. Also, I mentioned proficiency. A diplomatic leader is proficient in their written format and speed. So let's say if they are in a meeting and they have to take notes, they are very proficient in how they write and the speed in which they are able to gather and absorb information from, you know, a team or a group and be able to construct it in a way that is clear and concise and be able to represent it back to, you know, the employees in a way that, you know, or it could just be useful. Their notes could be useful for a decision-making process. That's what I would say. So that's a skill that a diplomatic leader has as far as being able to listen and take down, you know, notes and information effectively. Another factor is that they are verbally fluent and concise, very clear and you know, cut on what it is that they mean from what they say, or, you know, what they say from what they mean. They are really clear and concise. It's no confusion. It's no underlining, you know, meaning behind what they're saying. It's no confusion. You know, everybody is clear on what it is that they need to be doing and how they need to be doing it. You know, it's no, halfway explaining something to someone and then expecting a full result from the person. No, you have to, they are able to give an extended direction, you know, in its full length to, you know, their employee or whatever the case might be, and they understand the instructions fully 100%. So non-effective leaders are not able to articulate themselves to where the key players are able to understand what that leader is saying from what they mean. As a result, it can cause confusion. It can cause people saying that they can do stuff when they really can't really do it. But at the end of the day, you know, it's leading them to be confused. And even when they do voice their confusion, you know, someone who's not an effective leader will still give misguided information, even though their intentions is to give clear instructions on something. So sometimes you have to be very careful in your leadership role and how you lead other people, because sometimes you could be leading them in the wrong direction, or it could be developing into a recipe for disaster. Another thing about diplomatic leaders, they are meticulous and as far as paying attention to details. Once again, as I said, that goes hand in hand with them being able to verbally articulate themselves fluently and clear and concise, and through written format as well. So they are good listeners. They listen effectively. They don't listen to respond to other people. They're quiet and they gather all of the information first, all of the facts first, before they make a stance or say anything in particular. So it's almost as if, you know, diplomatic leaders, they do their homework first before they actually take action and doing anything in the second. So I'm going to take a break. Okay, welcome back, everyone. If you ever wanted to know what the call-in number is, if you ever wanted to ask a question, you know, voice your concerns, or whatever the case might be, the number is 516-590-0362. Once again, that number is 516-590-0362. Also, in addition, if you like the show and you want to show your love and your support, you can always go to PayPal and look for Natural Blog Talk Radio and, you know, donate or make any donations, the minimum of $10 if you choose to do so and to support the Natural Blog Talk Radio. Thank you. So now that I talked about what diplomatic leadership is about, the traits of diplomatic leaders, I'm going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of diplomatic leadership. So the advantages is that they always encourage collaboration and cooperation. They maximize fairness within an organization. They inspire other people to act. They create more leadership responsibilities. They create more leadership availability. They create a calm working environment, and they give credit to where credit is due. And this source of information comes from the Future of Working. Okay, so let me just elaborate on some key points about the advantages. So one of the factors is that they create more leadership availability, basically delegating responsibilities to other people. Because not a lot of times, you know, when people that are very articulate and talented, when they under a rulership or under, you know, a leadership that is only like one-sided and it doesn't really, they're not really open to creativity. Sometimes that can stifle the progression of people and cause some sense of hostility or inadequacy because they feel they can't, you know, be able to articulate themselves in a creative way. So diplomatic leaders know that innovation is key to everything, and they know that people that have talent and skills are so important in putting them in leadership roles to be able to have a sense of growth, okay, be able to extend themselves, gain experience. You know, a lot of times, you know, you have people in leadership roles or positions, they feel as though someone who's more talented than them, someone who's more skillful than them, they feel threatened by that person and therefore would try to keep them in a box, which is not good. So diplomatic leaders usually, you know, open the box and allow that person to explore and be innovative and creative, which I love about diplomatic leadership. Another factor is that diplomatic leaders are not problematic. They do not create problems to cause friction and chaos in a workplace. They don't do that. They don't do that. If anything, they're looking for people to get along, whether they like a person or not, and highlight the fact that it's not about the person's likes or dislike. It's about getting the work done and being able to do it in a way where everyone could feel comfortable at doing it. You know, so this is what I like about a diplomatic approach in leadership. And I like the fact that diplomatic leaders have this way of inspiring others to want to be creative, to want to act, to want to learn more, to be more innovative. They do that, and I like that. And I like the fact that diplomatic leaders are not, they don't have this thing where they have favoritism. that's a number one killer in a workplace. Because when you have favoritism, that means you would choose to hire somebody who's less skillful than someone who is skillful and talented. And that's not good, because then that could take down the organization goals because of your favoritism as a leader. It's not good. That means that, you know, certain work or dynamic of the work would not be able to get done effectively because of having favoritism. Diplomatic leaders don't look to favor anyone. They look for fairness amongst everyone. They don't look to give a less skillful person more income than a person who's really qualified for a position. And this has nothing to do with sexism. It could just simply be boss trying to look out for a friend and knowing that this friend of theirs is not skillful at a position, but will try to pull them in and bring them on board, and they know that they don't know a lick of anything as far as managing or being able to supervise anything. So it's not really good to do that or play on favoritism for someone to like you or for you to have an advantage over a person. That's not good leadership. So as I said before, the number one thing with diplomatic leaders is that they always encourage collaboration and cooperation. Always remember that. So now that I talked about the advantages of diplomatic leadership, I'm going to talk about the disadvantages of diplomatic leadership. And I want to highlight the fact of when you have a introverted diplomatic leader, sometimes it will look as though they are the peacemaker, yes, but they don't have control over their position or the authority over other people. And that's not always the truth. Just because a person is a peacemaker and always try to mediate the situation and get both sides of the role does not mean that they don't have any power or authority in their position as a diplomatic leader. Doesn't necessarily mean that. But however, when you have diplomatic leaders that are not able to speak up or speak out about a certain situation, sometimes it can cause that person or that leader to become powerless because they're not speaking up about a situation or highlighting something that's wrong and presenting it to the person. So instead of addressing the situation, they choose to take the back seat and not say anything and just expect for, you know, the situation to roll off, when that's not always effective, because diplomatic leaders see a problem and they fix the problem. They don't necessarily assume that the problem will fix itself. Okay, so that's one thing that I wanted to just highlight. And when you have an extroverted diplomatic leader, you know, it seems like this person has a charismatic personality about themselves, where everybody is just drawn to them. They want to, you know, learn from them. They want to, you know, know what's the next good thing, or, you know, they always just want to be around that person because they are understanding of them, and that person most likely 9 times out of 10 built a rapport with them already. Okay, so the disadvantages would be that sometimes it takes longer than possible for employees to accomplish their goals when you leave responsibilities to them. Because some people, when you give an inch to someone as far as leadership, they try to take the whole thing and think that they can handle everything, or because you give them a position that, oh, I can do whatever I want when I want. And that's not the way, that's not a good effective leadership as well, especially when you don't have no structure or dynamic in what you're doing. It's not good to be that way. Okay, and like I said, 9 times out of 10, it causes people to not want to work effectively with that person, because either you know, the communication is poor or the person is not really clear on executing projects and goals. So sometimes, you know, if you are and you identify yourself as a diplomatic leader, you want to be cautious and aware of how you articulate your objectives and your goals to, you know, a staff or team or group that's working with you in order to achieve a goal. If you know as a diplomatic leader that two employees don't like each other, you want to be able to either separate them and, you know, try to mediate the situation to where as each of them could get their work done and, you know, in a divided, you know, setting. So that way a goal can be achieved because you don't want friction going on because it's a power role going on back and forth, power struggle going back and forth between the two because you're giving out, you know, certain positions of leadership and things of that sort, and they are assuming this position and it's causing friction and conflict. That's a recipe for disaster. So that's going to cause delay when you give too much responsibilities to other people. You want to make sure you minimize it as much as possible and you pick out the key skillful, you know, players. Not that I'm saying that you're doing favoritism. It's just that you're trying to get the work done. Create unclear worker roles, as I mentioned before. Sometimes, you know, that can happen. You know, whereas when a leader is not really aware of what's taking place in a workplace and they trying to mediate a situation, not realizing that maybe the situation was already resolved already, but because they didn't get, you know, the back information or whatever the case might be, they might try to solve something that has already been solved and may overlap a solution based off of not being able to have all their facts in alignment. So sometimes that can cause a conflict of interest as well, because like I said, someone may have, you know, resolved the issue and delegated responsibilities to someone, and then here you come giving an example, you not realizing that it was resolved and you trying to resolve it yourself, and you assigning somebody else who already was assigned to the position, and it's causing a conflict of interest. So you don't want that to happen as a diplomatic leader. So as I said before, it creates a role that can overlap itself when you do that. So you always want to be clear and concise in your approach as a diplomatic leader. It could cause some leaders to withhold opinions. Yes, if they have someone who's just, you know, just about being authoritative and just having more of a dictatorial leadership, sometimes a diplomatic leader would sometimes take the seat back and may not say anything. They may not want to share their opinions because they don't want to create more of an issue or problem at stake. Okay, so sometimes that can happen. Nobody's perfect. Another factor is that they can give incorrect priorities or have incorrect priorities of what's most important to what's least important. Sometimes that can happen as a diplomatic leader. So we went over for tonight's show what's diplomatic leadership, the traits of a diplomatic leader, and the advantages and disadvantages of leadership. So for those who listened to tonight's show, once again, thank you for listening to tonight's show, and that I hope that you all learned something new and you have a wonderful night. Good night.